this year. C.J. Johnson in At the Movies.
C.J., good evening. Welcome to Night Live.
Good evening, Philip.
Two movies tonight, Berlin Syndrome, a thriller, and Free Fire, a crime film. Okay, let's start with Berlin Syndrome.
Yeah, both of these films actually have kind of a tie-in, which is confined spaces. Berlin Syndrome is what you would call, I guess, a female captive movie. Mm-hmm. And there is a history of these films. They're a subgenre of thrillers. And to my mind, they go back to The Collector from 1965.
The John Fowles book. Yeah,
yeah, the John Fowles book. And it was made into a very A-list picture. It was directed by William Wyler. It starred Terrence Stamp and Samantha Egar. And it was nominated for 3 Oscars. Mm. And since then, over the course of time, the genre or the subgenre of female captivity movies has slid down into B-list territory.
Well, yeah. The Room recently was another
Room
example.
Room was very A-list. Yeah, that was really good.
That was good. Yeah.
But that was very much about the relationship between the woman and her boy in the room, and then they come out into the world. Not about the relationship between the woman and her captor. Mm. The captor was barely seen in that film. There have been films like Boxing Helena and Black Snake Moan and Captivity.
Yep.
And, you know, some of them are sort of A-list and some of them are kind of sleazy and exploitative. So what this one is, quite interesting because the director is Kate Shortland, the Australian director, mm-hmm. who gave us Somersault in 2004. And Somersault won 13 AFI awards. It won every single award that was available for feature films that year. I mean, it was ludicrous. It blitzkrieged the entire awards. And that's a pretty good start to your feature film career. Since then, she's made one other feature film before this one, which was also set in Germany. Mm-hmm. And this one is set in Berlin, and it's called Berlin Syndrome. And it was actually shot in Berlin and Melbourne, and it is essentially an Australian feature film, but made in Berlin.
Okay.
I guess Kate lived in Berlin a while. So it's about an Australian traveller slash backpacker, a young woman played by Teresa Palmer, and she meets a handsome German guy on the streets of Berlin, and he becomes her captor. And the thing is, that's about all you need to know, because if you know this subgenre, you know the plot. This is how these things go. So it's all about the execution. And the execution in this one is very good. This is an example of a truly artistic director, you know, a director who cares and assembling a crew and giving it an A-list treatment. So on a level of film craftsmanship, it is very well done. The camera work is superb, the production design is superb, and the two actors are terrific. Teresa Palmer, who has sort of struggled, I guess, to try and become an A-list sort of Naomi Watts-level actress in Hollywood and just hasn't gotten the roles for it, and so remains sort of bumping around in television and smaller roles in films over there, gives her best performance to date in this film. And what she brings to her role, particularly once she becomes a captive, is she doesn't just give you all the qualities of being terrified and trying to be resourceful and trying to be resilient and all of that stuff, but she gives you something else, which is sort of slightly beyond realism, which I suggest Mia Farrow gave us in Rosemary's Baby way back in 1968, which is this sort of like the very sight of her is terrifying, that she just sort of somehow brings this brittle, fragile quality that just makes you aware of just how terrified she is, almost beyond the character itself. It's a physical performance. It's understanding the impact of how she's looking on the screen beyond realism.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, the guy who is a German actor is he's very good. His name is Max Reimelt, but the nature of his pathology is such that he's very implacable. So he doesn't really have a lot to play. So that's all good. What's not so good is that I don't see any reason to make yet another film in this genre
in this
territory.
Particular genre, because that's right. Because as you say, it's such a well explored genre, isn't it? And it has to have a narrative storyline, which we all know.
Yeah.
So only one of two things ever happens.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. So I won't tell you which.
No, of course not. But only one of two things ever happens. Yeah. And it's been done, as you say, many, many times.
Yeah. So there's nothing new here. There's no. I was hoping, because it is a female director and because she is a good director and is a highly opinion, you know, strong opinion director, I was hoping that there would be a feminist subtext or some approach that gave us something, that told us something new, but it doesn't.
Okay.
It doesn't. The guy, the captor, has no extra levels of revelation about why
she doesn't
men
take
do
the genre
this.
Any further.
No, she just does it well.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's not such a small thing anyway.
No, it's a good thriller.
Yeah. This is a little from Berlin Syndrome.
Couldn't find the key. Did you leave me a key?
Yes. Sure. I thought I left it on the table.
Nope. I didn't think I'd be able to get back in, and then I realized that I couldn't even leave.
Hey, you can leave now. I take a shower.
Did you lock me in?
Yes, sure. But next time, tied to the bed.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's well done. If you like this kind of thing, this is a good one. And it is, as I say, very, very well acted. And it's also a nice trip to Berlin. Like, the locations are very well used.
Okay, well, look, there's nothing wrong with a well-made film, as you say.
No, it's a well-made thriller.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, Berlin Syndrome. Now, Free Fire.
This is an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
So Ben Wheatley is one of my favorite young directors who I keep wanting his films to be slightly better than they are, because the first film I saw of his was so good.
Mm-hmm.
His first two films, Down Terrace and Kill List, were both fantastic, both amazing films, kind of perfect little jewels. And since then, his films have remained fascinating, but they're never quite fully satisfying, but maybe I'm expecting too much. He is so prolific that this is the second of his films that you and I are talking about, and, you know, since you started. And because the first one of his we talked about was High Rise.
Mm-hmm.
So he's churning out more than a film a year, which is
That's pretty
amazing. He's churning out a film about every 9 months, which is quite a lot for a feature film director. So this one is an experiment. It's all set... Well, it's almost entirely set in a warehouse outside of Boston, even though he shot it in his hometown of Brighton in the United Kingdom. And the experiment slash conceit slash high concept is it's an arms deal gone wrong. So you've got a lot of colorful characters getting together. One of them is a group of guys from the IRA trying to buy weapons, and the other is a group of guys with weapons trying to sell them. And anytime there's an arms deal like this, you know, people are packing arms, there are arms around, and it's always a tinderbox. It's always, you know, things could go wrong, and you're praying they don't because things are going to go wrong. And you meet the colorful characters in the setup for the first 25 minutes, and they are very colorful characters. It's all set in the 70s too, so everyone's got crazy facial hair, and everyone's got groovy suits and groovy ties, and it's all of that's very, very funny, very Tarantino, very, you know, Reservoir Dogs. And then, of course, something goes wrong, and guns are going to be drawn and bullets are going to start flying, as is the title of the film, Free Fire. This is where his experimental conceit comes in. That never stops. It's from then on till the end of the movie, so 70 minutes later, it is just a gunfight in a warehouse.
And for 70 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah, you've got about 20 minutes of character setup, and then the rest of it is the gunfight.
Okay.
And, you know,
even the OK Corral went that long.
No. So I've heard him on interviews saying, like, what would happen in a normal film is they'd have this gunfight, and then other things would happen. You know, some of them would stumble away, and they'd meet again, blah, blah, blah.
That's right.
And I'm like, what if that doesn't happen? What if we just see the gunfight till the end of the movie? And so that's what he's done. So when you're setting that up, what you've got to do is you've got to care about the characters. You've got to maintain logic, an interior logic within the warehouse, so that we can follow what's going on in the gunfight, because they are sensibly split off into about three or four different groups around this warehouse. And it's got to remain fun because, you know, it's a juggling act. Luckily, you care about the characters. They're so well set up in the first 20 minutes. They're so fun, and it's so clear the stakes involved. There are machine guns, there's IRA, there's a lot of that stuff, that you do care about the characters, which is good for this sort of film. The second requirement, that you actually understand where they all are, that starts to slip. And that is kind of crucial, because if you can't tell where everyone is and you can't keep track of the battle itself, then the whole experiment, the whole house of cards, starts to fall apart a little bit. And does it stay fun for the whole 90 minutes? Well, not quite. I did find my attention drifting. After a while, I thought, oh, this experiment is actually not making it to the finish line. Okay. It's not really working. That said, if this kind of thing intrigues you, then you're at least seeing it attempted at a very high level of technical expertise and care.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see the drum. Yeah, it's got dramatic possibilities.
And it's funny. Yeah. The whole point is it's funny. Like, they're not just shooting each other for those 70 minutes. They're calling out to each other and they're exchanging quips and and new twists are being added. New people are arriving. They've got to get to a phone. Revelations happen. Betrayals happen. So it's sort of, in a way, it's very pure. It's going back to something like, I don't know, you know, to theatre craft in a way. It's like, how do we keep the story in the air under the intense constraint of this kind of ludicrous premise?
Yes, all right. This is a little from Free Fire.
Vernon is in the blue suit.
Who's the other fella?
Martin. He was a panther, but it didn't work out. Vernon was misdiagnosed as a child genius, and he never got over it.
Vernon, these are boys from across the pond.
Well, everyone's from somewhere, eh? Justine, as gorgeous as ever.
Well, you've put on a bit of weight.
What do you say we check out the merch?
He says it's not what he ordered.
I'm not running a pizza delivery service. Do you want the weapons or you don't want the weapons?
Look.
They assault rifles. You said rifles. Justine, you said rifles. What do you want? This is what was available.
Who's the South African accent?
So that's a guy named Charlto Copley.
Is he South African?
Yeah, he's South African. He came to prominence in a film called District 9 a few years ago.
Oh, wonderful film. Yeah.
He's the lead guy from that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So he's been sort of bumming around Hollywood doing the occasional gig. People don't quite know what to do with him, so sometimes he plays the bad guy, sometimes he plays the South African guy. So in this, he's a South African arms dealer, and he gets to use his South African accent, and he is so funny in this film. You could just hear him just there. Just his South African accent and the way he uses it is almost inherently funny no matter what he says. He's really good. And that's what it is. Even though the characters are tough types, IRA guys, etc., it's a light touch. Okay. They're funny IRA guys. They're funny arms dealers. You know what I mean? There is a woman in it. Brie Larson is in it.
I was going to say, speaking of Room, which we were talking about just earlier, just in reference to the previous movie, she's in it. Brie Larson.
She's in it, yep. She is the single female in it. Unfortunately, she doesn't really get a lot to do. She's not going to get another Oscar for this one. But Armie Hammer is in it. He's the guy who played the twins in The Social Network.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very tall, good-looking American guy. And he's very, very funny in it, too. So there's a lot of really good character turns, and they don't use any CGI. They fired some amazing amount of rounds in the course of the film, 60,000 rounds or something. So all of that gun stuff is all very present and real, and the sound design is really interesting.
Yeah, I was going to say, sound design would have to be important in a warehouse with a gun movie that goes for 17 minutes.
Very much so. And they all get injured. They all get injured during the course of it. So they're all dragging themselves around and everything. I mean, technically it must have been crazy. Like, continuity on this film must have been a nightmare, because they all get dirty and they're losing fingers and
do we have all the usual tropes, like three guys coming and only two shots in the magazine?
Every
gun trope happens.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it sounds worth a look. All right, stars. Berlin Syndrome.
I can give Berlin Syndrome 3.
Mm-hmm. And Free Fire?
3.5.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've had a good crop of movies lately, haven't we?
Yeah. April's a really good time in Australia for film, for distribution. Absolutely.
Good to see you, CJ.
Thanks, Philip.
CJ Johnson at the movies.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.